You have tuned in to an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to get to that intense and lively meeting, but a couple of quick hits. Wanted to let everybody know that Northwest Detention Center Resistance, that is the local group that has been keeping people alert about the hunger strike, we reported last week that it was over. They are reporting today that at least 9 women continue on the hunger strike, and that started, I believe, mid-April. They are saying that ICE threatened them with transfers, forced medical treatment, and blocking access to hygiene items. At least one protester is in solitary confinement because of resisting a retaliatory transfer. And again, this is all from Northwest Detention Center Resistance. They're also reporting that the hunger strike has spread to a jail in Oregon. The Oregon jail is NorCor. It's a facility that also holds youth and adults in addition to making contracts with ICE. They have had accusations of inhumane treatment before. Just an aside, the ACLU notes that before 1996, with minor exceptions, every person who received formal deportation orders was given a full hearing before an independent judge, and that was before the Immigration Responsibility Act of 1996. Now the ACLU reports over 80% of detainees never get a hearing or representation. And so, if you are interested in learning more, then please do reach out to Northwest Detention Center Resistance. You can find them on Facebook and online. We also had our citizen journalist, Liz Darrow, who went down to Tacoma last week, and you can hear her report on CascadiaNewsNow.com. Now moving on to our former governor and Congressman Mike Lowry. He was a 20th governor in Washington State, and he died yesterday. Dave?
Yeah, Mike Lowry was a champion for equality in Washington State. He was active with Hands Off Washington, which was a anti-discrimination campaign. And he, in Congress, he championed what eventually turned into the Civil Liberties Act of 1988, which wound up actually giving reparations and led to a formal apology by the United States government to Japanese citizens who'd been interned during World War II. He really was, you know, a lot of the news reports talk about him as a fire-breathing liberal, but he really believed in Washington State, and he really fought for things that we're still fighting about, like tax reform and social services. And in his, you know, post-governor life, he was still active. He still toured the state, and there's actually a entertaining bit on TVW that's him speaking to the Kitsap Association of Realtors in, I believe, 2005. And he spends a good chunk of his time there speaking, making the case for specific parks in Kitsap County to these realtors. Like, your property value is directly tied to how good these parks are. And he'll be missed. He looms quite large in our history here.
Yeah, I would say about him, I never considered him a firebrand, but if you're a liberal and if you're a Democrat, his blood was your blood. And he, and the other thing, and I really appreciate this about what you said, Dave, is his interest was always the benefit of Washington State, and that was always foremost in his mind. And in his post-governorship, he actually, I mean, you know, a lot of people, they figure that's the pinnacle of their career. But Mike decided he was going to run for lands commissioner after he was the governor, and he ran against Doug Sutherland for that position. And I did an interview with him in that era when he was running for that position. And I don't know if listeners realize this, but one of the functions of the Department of Natural Resources is to log and then the money goes to schools. Mm-hmm. And one of Mike's things that he was trying to do in that period was try to sever that, because he said, you know, we've got forests and we've got schools, and we need them both very, very much, and they shouldn't be put in competition with one another. And so that was just the way he thought about things, and he was a really remarkable person, I think.
I got to say, I mean, I don't think he's any Emmanuel Cleaver. I don't think he's a Barack Obama, but as Washington State representatives go, I think he was pretty passionate. I remember some table pounding here and there in his past. We do have some audio of Mike Lowry in maybe one of his less passionate moments, but here is a Mike Lowry joke.
I was in the grocery store not too long ago, and a fella came up to me and he said, has anybody ever told you that you look just like Mike Lowry? And I said, well, yes. And he said, that must really make you mad.
We need strong anti-hate crime legislation. That is in the state legislature. I certainly support that. We need to all speak out against what the OCA is standing for, which is strong discrimination against individuals. That has no place in this country, certainly has no place in the state of Washington, and I support the hands-off campaign that says no to that type of very dangerous activity in our state. Presently, what we're doing are taking people, especially young people, sending them to prison with hardened criminals. We haven't worked on rehabilitation, on addressing the problems of why they went in there in the first place. And I think because of that, we're actually a less safe society. Let's develop alternative programs so that part of that sentence, rather than being in prison, will be in rehabilitation programs, to where when they do finish their sentence and come back out, they will be less dangerous to society. Secondly, these prison costs are the second biggest driver of the budget deficit, second only to health care, that we have. We're going to spend $212 million next biennium more than this biennium for prisons. At our present rate of increase of filling state prisons, Chase Reeveland said, I say this as a little bit of a humorous story, by the year 2052, everybody in the state of Washington be in prison or be a prison guard. We have got to get a different approach to what's happening, and I am for working on alternative programs for nonviolent young people to make it a safer society. Remember that 90% of the budget is education and social services. 60% is education, 30% social services. At some place into the cuts, you hit a wall. You hit a wall that says if we go further, not only are we not going to open up enrollment in our higher education institutions, we're going to cut 20,000 students away from the present enrollment. That would be catastrophic for the economic vitality of our state. And you'd say, not only are we reducing expenditures on social services, the cuts would be so deep, the federal government would decertify our program. So at some place, and I say, most people say that's $500 million, I say I'll take it even to $800 million, the cuts beyond that become catastrophic. We can't do that for the health and safety and future of our state. We should be stepping forward as a state and society to provide the services for all of our citizens that deserve those state services, both those that are in institutions and those that are not. One important way of doing that is to be supportive of what's called supportive employment services, which is an important state role that I will support continuing.
If you're going to raise Mary and Mike taxes $200 so that we can have a better shot of preventing the type of disasters that have happened with gun violence, please raise those taxes. It's the best buy we can get.
The tradition of the Native Americans, the first Americans, is a tradition that we need to get everyone else to follow in this country, which is your word is your bond, you keep your word, and that's why I have always opposed the unilateral abrogation of treaties and will always oppose that.
We have a tax system that is serving the people of the state very badly and is overtaxing the middle and lower income of these people of the state. It's hurting our business. We have a huge deficit now in the state government. One of the reasons being is our outmoded tax system. We could have a fairer, much better for business tax system and not be facing the type of deficit we are if we would reform our tax system.
We had a $1.8 billion deficit caused by the recession, and so we laid out a plan by which to put together what I call jobs and the environment, but recognizing the appeal of our state with our great natural resources and everything else. This is a place companies should want to locate.
And that was a collection of clips of former Governor Mike Lowry. And I wanted to add one more thing. He stood up and he vetoed the Defense of Marriage Act in Washington State at a time when that was a deeply unpopular position to take.
That's right.
And his veto was overridden. And I think that's a real testament to how forward-thinking he was and how important equality was to him.
I'm really glad you brought that up. That was a time when the rest of our delegation, Patty Murray, was vocally against, and she voted for DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. And absolutely one of the first in our state, I think. Thank you for bringing that up, Dave, and thank you for putting those clips together. You are tuned to Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contours, and we have a full house. That was Dave Willingham that you heard. Also, Melora Christensen from Catholic Community Services. She's the Associate Director of Housing. Mike McCauley, Bellingham Port Commissioner, and Cascadia Weekly Editor Tim Johnson. So let's get into that port meeting. Three of you were there last night. Mike, I'm going to go ahead and hand you the floor. How are you feeling today?
A little beat up this morning, but I knew I was going to lose the vote last week, so I had an okay weekend, but recovering. I think I'll survive.
You already knew ahead going into that.
Yeah, we've been talking about what to do in regards to the purchase for, you know, well over a month now, and I had a pretty solid idea that unless something changed between last week and this week, that it would be a 2-1 vote.
Okay,
but something.
Let's catch everybody up first on what we're talking about. And so what happened was, this is all about that rotor site.
Yep.
The city of Bellingham has done a whole bunch of research and work, and really they say they identified this as pretty much the only location possible for a more permanent shelter that was a wet shelter where people could go if they were having substance abuse. It was supposed to be 200 beds. When the port balked and a lot of people balked, they had offered $300,000 to the port. And that's what this meeting was about last night. Go ahead, Tim.
Right. And that was the question I had for you, Commissioner, which is that something had changed.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor came forward and really suggested a partnership at a higher level between the city of Bellingham and the port of Bellingham. The city would put in $30,000 for infrastructure development and marine trades, and she called upon the port to be a partner, to accept this as a deal, and not to spend $750,000 on your option to purchase the property, but maybe to spend that instead on some infrastructure development in the watershed. And I'm a little surprised to hear that the commissioners were dead set. They were dead set in their positions. Despite that,
That was a little shocking to me. I was happy that the $300,000 was put forward. That I thought would really make a difference to the businesses that would be affected. There's property right next door to this that is perfectly suitable to move them onto. We have about 8 acres. 4 of those are inside of a building. It's a good building. It would have to be demarcated, so spaces would have to be carved out. But it's a big, wide-open warehouse right now. So the additional $300,000 and what the port would have probably worked within our, you know, our budget to figure out how much we would put in. But, you know, we could take care of those businesses. We could expand into 8 acres we didn't have before because it was rented to a baby furniture company. And we could make those businesses whole and, in fact, give them more space for less money. So I thought that might carry the day, but clearly I was wrong on that one.
So the complaints were from people at the port and from a lot of the public that they felt that it disrupted jobs or it could lose jobs. Mm-hmm. And what you've just said is that with the money that was offered from the city, that wouldn't have – I mean, people would have moved, but – businesses move all the time. They would have been mostly fine.
Yeah, if this was if we didn't have any space available, then this would have been a much different conversation than it was. But when you can stand in front of this particular property and you look just above the worn out old building that you're looking at, just to the right above it, you see a big sign that says for lease 240,000 square feet, and that's inside a building. And then surrounding that building is another 4+ acres of pavement and gravel yard. So there was no space constraint for any of those businesses. In fact, it was eight times more property available there than they're on right now. So there's considerations for space weren't really, in my mind, a problem. Some people tried to latch onto that and say that it was a problem, but we clearly had plenty of space.
So let's check in with you, Melora. So you're the Associate Director of the Housing at Catholic Community Services, and you were there last night. And when you were going to the meeting, what was your feeling about the situation?
Well, I think it's a really complicated and complex topic, specifically because the reality is that no area is ideal for a homeless shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it needs to be in an industrial area. It can't be in a residential area. And so we're really limited on that. And I, you know, sitting in that meeting, listening to businesses, thinking about the working waterfront, you know, I did not envy your position. Because it's complex, and yeah, it's really about the vision of this community and where our priorities are.
Mm-hmm.
And with any type of equity, there has to be some give. Like, we are not going to undo these complex problems that we have in front of us without giving of something. And now, is that the port's responsibility? Is that the city's? Is that a nonprofit like the Mission? I mean, who is supposed to carry that? So it was complicated, and I left that meeting feeling, before the vote happened, but, you know, just really feeling torn. The end of the day is that we have hundreds of people that are sleeping outside, and that's with a full shelter. And, you know, even with this property, it was going to take at least a year for that to open. Mm-hmm. So we're just looking. When I think about what it was really about, it was encouraging to me that the conversation last night was not about whether we should or should not have a low barrier shelter. You know, when we opened Francis Place, which was quite controversial, it's a housing first permanent supportive apartment building for adults that have been chronically homeless right downtown behind Boundary Bay. Lots of people didn't want to see it there. But the conversation 4 years ago was, you know, we're not sure we want those people here.
Mm, I remember that.
And yeah, I just felt like the conversation last night wasn't about that. It was really about, you know, this, our waterfront and where we're going and tourism and things like that. But again, those are our values. As a community, are we saying that tourism is more important than
But some of that
lives?
Seems thinly disguised to me. Some of that, oh no, we really care about our homeless situation. We just don't want somebody here. Like, to me, I have a hard time not being suspicious of that.
Well, I guess I would say that I've gone to all of these meetings, and I think there's a high degree. I mean, at this meeting with the port yesterday, I think there was only one person that kind of stood up and said, you know, mm-hmm, they, if you don't work, you don't eat, and I don't have any sympathy with you. Everybody else, I think, recognizes the need for this, and the essential question was, is this the last best place that it could go? Now, I wanted to circle back to something, Commissioner, mm-hmm, and you were talking about the building, and the building that you're talking about is the former Georgia Pacific Tissue Mill,
yeah,
warehouse, and that building is basically the size, my understanding is it's about the size of 5 football fields, and it's empty.
I don't know how big that is. but it one time, until the cold storage was built out in Linden a year ago, which is now expanded, it used to be the biggest building in the county, and it's 5 acres under one roof. And right now, about 40,000 square feet of those 5 acres is being used. So there's plenty of space in there.
Right. And so your position on this, and the reason you felt you could support the city's plan, was that you believe that within that location, there are plenty of places to move those businesses,
yeah,
and also even bring new businesses in.
Yeah.
And you had a problem with the budgetary expense of laying out $750,000, mm-hmm, when the port desperately needs to repair some of the infrastructure that it has.
We have some massive infrastructure problems all over the port, and these are properties from, you know, the south end of Bellingham and Fairhaven all the way up to the plywood plant on the north end of the bay, and then throw in Blaine, and, you know, we're $20-some million behind on fixing things up there that are literally falling into the harbor. So the constraints on the port's budget, the ask from our partner at the city, can we use this property in a different way? And we have space to make those businesses whole. So you put that all into one big package. And yeah, I don't want a homeless shelter, you know, in my backyard either. But when your partner comes to you and says, this is something we really need, and I look around and I talk to the businesses downtown, and they call me and they tell me I'm spending tens of thousands a year on these things and the city's offering an option, you know, it's not like we're biting a bullet here. It just seems like we're helping our partner.
And this is this is where you differed from your other commissioners, because you know, they were sort of the mind that this really isn't a port business, and we've really got to look to port interests, and we've got to keep this Marine Trade Center intact. And your position was more that one of our important partners in Whatcom County, the City of Bellingham, has asked us to step up for help, and you wanted to step up and also save $750,000.
What Melora said. Exactly, I mean, it comes right back to whose responsibility is it? And I think a lot of people point their fingers at the city, and yet these are all entities that have a relationship with each other and should continue to have a relationship with each other.
Yeah, and I want to take this back to the values question. So the port is going to spend more than $750,000 for this space. What are we getting for that? What have we gotten back now that they've said they're going to purchase that?
You want to know what the port's getting or what the city's getting?
I want to know what the port's getting.
I don't know what the city's going to get with $775,000 or whatever the number actually is. I'm just saying $800,000 because it's simple. That to me is almost more important, because we're going to take $800,000 taxpayer dollars from the people of Whatcom County, and we're going to give it to the city to do something with to help them solve their homeless problem. That is a question that all the taxpayers of Whatcom County should be asking, and hopefully the outcomes are really good. And I know people like Melora are gonna help, you know, with a good solution. From the port side, I can put on my cynical hat or I can put a nice face on it. I think I'd rather use my cynical hat right now, which is we are going to get a property with a building that's too small for the businesses that are using it. The ceilings are too low. The doors are falling off. It needs a new toilet. The yard floods every time it rains, and you have to walk on makeshift wooden walkways, little bridges to get over the flooding your way into the office. That's what the port just got for $800,000. So right now it's actually a liability, because the port is going to have to put money into it to make the tenants more comfortable and repair things. Like, for example, the door that doesn't open, a great big roll-up door, it doesn't open. The advantage of the tissue warehouse for those marine businesses is all the doors work, which is really nice. They can get inside. It's warm, dry, and the roof, the lowest point of the roof's 25 feet up, which is almost double the building that they're in right now. So the expansion opportunities for those businesses was huge, but... I'd love to hear from Melora on what the city can do with $800,000.
Well, it just sounded like you were saying that she was going to help us come up with the solution. So
yes.
Are you ready for that?
Well, I mean, I think this is kind of veering a little bit, but, you know, emergency shelter is needed because we have hundreds of people on the street. At the same time, it's really a Band-Aid fix on a gushing wound. So evidence-based, I mean, we need housing. We need permanent housing for people. We need rent controls. We need to make sure that people aren't discriminating against people that hold Section 8 vouchers. There's a lot of issues in just affordable housing that need to be addressed, and we have a lot of great new developments coming online, and that's going to help. I appreciate the city stepping up, because we have a public health safety and just a values question right now is if we're going to address the current need. But we also, at the exact same time, the city needs to continue, and the county, they need to continue to invest in long-term housing solutions. So with that amount of money, there's a lot of things that can be done. And, you know, maybe I think the mission stepped up, and that's great, but, you know, maybe other agencies will also step up. I mean, I think that property was so well situated for their kind of campus and what they do.
Last night I was surprised that Sheriff Elfel came and talked to us. Yeah. And you know, he stayed very apolitical and didn't choose sides, which I really appreciate. But he also asked us to work with the city. And I don't think he was asking us to have port staff work on a city problem, which is something I don't want to do anyway, because the port staff should not be involved in solving a homeless problem for the city of Bellingham or Whatcom County. But it was clear that it's an issue of great importance to the sheriff, because that's the only time in the last – well, excuse me, he came to us once before. I've been there for 8 years. He's been there once before, and it was to say thank you for something we did out of the airport for the county. So this was an ask, and when someone that you've never seen before of a stature like his comes and asks you for some help, you don't just discount that. So it's a big issue even outside the city of Bellingham for sure.
You know, and I guess I appreciated that too. He tried to stay at this higher level, and I think that was, you know, if I could characterize it, the discussion. Most people, I mean, almost everybody at that meeting was like, we do need this shelter. Mm-hmm. Whether it was in that precise, exact location is really the linchpin. And, you know, I have a little anecdote. When I was coming down to your meeting, I was walking past the property. I walked down from downtown past the property, and Bellingham police were there, and they were arresting some people who were trespassing in that exact location. Mm-hmm. They were squatting on a boat. Mm-hmm. They were living on board this boat, and the police came to get them out. And so it became really clear to me, and I've been very agnostic on this whole thing, but it became very clear to me that there is an essential incompatibility issue with industry and the boat building and marine operations and that particular use contemplated by the city. But one of the things that I think has gotten glossed over, and I really want to make a point about, is that this is this was city property, and they were simply asking you to abandon your option on it, which you refused to do.
So it wasn't in the port's jurisdiction.
No. Right.
It was in the city's jurisdiction.
It's a city.
That somehow makes me angrier about the whole thing. I don't think I understood that clarification.
Well, it was a simple question for the port. Should we buy this property or should we not buy this property? Buying the property forced the city to take what they wanted to do somewhere else. But it is a piece of city property, not port property.
Right.
And if it had been port property, they wouldn't have gotten more than 5 minutes with the executive director with an ask, because the port would not do that on our property. Ports constantly push back against uses like that. Ports across the state are constantly asked for this sort of thing on their properties. And ports across the state, all 75, have been very consistent that they don't do that.
So I heard something out in the hallway, and you don't have to approach this if you don't want to, but I know there's been talk before about the number of commissioners.
Yeah.
And how did that play into last night? Would it have been better or worse if we had more commissioners?
I don't know, better or worse personally. I think we had a good debate. I think like most bodies of our kinds, you know, when I say I know how the vote's going to go, even though we haven't taken it yet, I think you could find any council that would say the same thing, because you know what other people are saying and how they're likely to fall. So I don't know if more commissioners would have been better or worse.
Okay. We are going to continue this conversation. You are listening to Cascadia News Now, and we will be right back.
The Bellingham YWCA welcomes Captain Deborah Dempsey, a trailblazer for women in the maritime industry and the first woman to captain a merchant vessel on the high seas, as keynote speaker for the YWCA Leadership Breakfast May 19th from 7 to 9 a.m. at the Sheraton Four Points Hotel. Proceeds support YWCA emergency and transitional housing for single homeless women and clothing for any low-income Whatcom County woman seeking employment. Details are available at ywcabellingham.org. At the Alzheimer's Association, our mission is to eliminate Alzheimer's disease through the advancement of research, to provide and enhance care and support for all affected, and to reduce the risk of dementia through the promotion of brain health. If you or someone you know is caring for a loved one with younger onset Alzheimer's or dementia, there is help available. Alzheimer's Association Family Caregiver Support Groups provide a consistent and caring place for people to learn, share, and gain emotional support from others who are also on a unique journey of providing care to a person with younger onset memory loss, diagnosed by the age of 65 or younger. Meetings are starting soon. For information, call Linda Whiteside at 206-529-3875 or 1-800-848-7097. Our vision is a world without Alzheimer's. For more information, visit www.alz.org.
You are tuned to Cascadia News Now. You are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, KMRE.org, all over the world. I'm Stephanie Contouris on Cascadia News Now with a lot of guest hosts. This week we have Port Commissioner Michael McCauley, fresh from the port meeting yesterday. Also, who was at the port meeting, Melora Christensen. She's the Associate Director of Housing at Catholic Community Services. Our legislative maven and our electoral maven and expert will be getting into a legislative report later with Dave Willingham, and our editor of Cascadia Weekly, Tim Johnson, who has more to say about the meeting last night. Take it away, Tim.
Well, yeah, you know, we've talked about this. It is a lot. There was a lot of great testimony at that meeting and from all sides. And one of the people that stood up early was Greg Winter, the director of Opportunity Council, and he's been the lead on a lot of homelessness issues. And he spoke, and he actually kind of got choked up at the end to the point where he actually couldn't finish what he had to say, which was very important. But he got kind of choked up with this issue, which is it's a very profound issue. And Melora, you had talked earlier about how any sort of a homeless shelter is just a Band-Aid on the situation. And what Greg had to say was interesting, which is if you want to know the fundamental, overarching 100% issue regarding homelessness, it's the issue of affordable housing stock. There are ancillary things like drug and alcohol abuse. But if you really want to know what do all of these homeless people have in common, it's the lack of access to some affordable housing option. And I think that was brilliantly stated by him. And I hope we get a chance to talk about it more. And I hope you have more to say on that too, Melora.
Yeah, I have a lot to say on it. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Greg's comments were perfectly suited for the larger picture and what our community really is grappling with. And, you know, the research is out there, and what people really need is safety, and they need shelter and all those other things. I mean, the type of housing that we do at CCS is, you know, it's housing first. People get to... And housing is a basic human right, and that's how we view it, and that's how I believe our community, if we really get down and asked our neighbors what they thought, like, I think we would all agree that this is something we believe in, that anyone has that right to be sheltered. And so, you know, people don't have to be sober, they don't have to, their mental health doesn't need to be treated. The judgment is removed as you know, much as we can, and it really is take this space and work on those other things. And if there's simply no housing, how are you supposed to do that?
Right. I'm going to throw something out there because it's what I've heard people say. It's not being said here, but I've heard it expressed that if we build something, more people will come. And I'm going to throw it out there. Like, is that a valid concern? What if we have the best services and we become Santa Monica of the North?
It's been thrown out, but it's been thrown out there. But and this was brought up at your last Port Commission meeting, actually, where, and it was Greg again that put this out there, that there actually is data that says that when you go out and you pull and you meet the actual homeless people and you ask them where their last address was, it doesn't matter what city in the Northwest you ask that question in, 80% of them say that their address is, the last permanent address that they had is in the city where they live. So, and that's a firm statistic that runs across the board. And it doesn't change. And if you make things inviting for homeless people, or let's say you make things less terrible for homeless people, let's put it in that frame, it doesn't make any difference. On that 80-20 formula is stable.
Absolutely. And that, I mean, that our point in time count, that homeless census that we do as a community every year, that data has been every year the same. And it's the same percentage. If you ask people who are housed, if we went and asked how many people, you know, moved to this community because it's beautiful, for a job opportunity, because they had family nearby, it's that same 20 to 30% of people moving here. You meet transplants all the time. but it's not disproportionate to the homeless population.
Right. The other thing that, and I've talked to Greg about this, but what's it called? Is it called the Maslin hierarchy of needs? Where
Maslow.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. The Maslow hierarchy of needs. Where if you're homeless, your biggest concern is that you're not going to die within the next hour.
Exactly.
And so, if you can create conditions where you're not going to die within the next hour, and you're going to eat sometime today, and you're going to have a place to sleep, then once these basic needs are being met, then you can concentrate on other aspects of your life, and so that there is this sort of improvement pathway that's created through some kind of stability, like a homeless shelter or a program that places people in housing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I kind of saw the port getting in the way last night of the city getting something that getting something done that Tim, you alluded to a little while ago, which is, you know, people kind of camping out. And when I spoke with some folks at the Opportunity Council, and they shared a local study with me, which I believe was done under Todd Ramsey when he was chief of police here, and they looked at a small group of people. They were very well targeted, and they followed them through this process. And on average, these people were contacted by police 13 times a year. They were at the hospital 5, 6, 7 times a year. You know, this list of things that are drain on services. And then after working with these people and getting them into some kind of stable housing situation, those numbers dropped so dramatically that it raised my eyebrows. And I thought, well, geez, if we have a problem with people that have nowhere to go and nowhere to be, so they get themselves into trouble, idle hands and all that, then, you know, from a port commissioner that's worried about people wandering around on port property, that seems like a win-win for me because, you know, these people are less likely to be a problem for the port and the port having to spend money to handle it.
And I think it's easy for us all to sort of distance ourselves from people who are without housing, but I think you're all hitting a point that we are one step away. Any of us is one step away from being what we call these people, that mm-hmm. they're us, and we are them, and we could be them. And it's very similar to the survey. The city of Bellingham did. We are all concerned about housing, whether or not you are currently in a house or not. We are all concerned about housing, and I want to remind people that there is going to be a town hall. Of course, it's even more important now that this sale didn't happen, but the town hall meeting is coming up Monday, May 15th, and it is on housing affordability for everyone from 7 p.m. At the Mount Baker Theater, and then doors open at 6:30 p.m., and it's an excellent time because the city really does want us all to work on it for every single person from every position that they're in right now.
Right. I actually spoke to City Council President Michael Lilliquist about this town hall meeting, and what he expressed to me is there's a lot of ambivalence on City Council right now about what this meeting is for.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because is it a data collection instrument? Is it a way of...
Do we already have that with the survey?
Yeah. Is it a way to connect with the community? And this is certainly part of it, but let the community know that the city wants to know more about this and is trying to learn more about this. But really, there's... I think that my perception of that meeting is that the quality and character of the people that show up are going to determine the tone and the focus moving mm-hmm. forward in the town hall meeting.
What do you think, mm-hmm. Mike?
I'm worried about things like this. Last night at our meeting, I was a little astonished because, you know, typically at public meetings, there's, you know, clapping is frowned upon. But last night, our president let that happen. So somebody would say, buy the property, push the homeless elsewhere, and about half the room would clap. And then somebody would say, no, you know, the homeless shouldn't be pushed away, and about half the room would clap. So that was kind of interesting. But I think trying to make policy based on how many people are clapping is a really bad method and should be avoided at all costs. So, you know, a town hall is great, but I don't know how you take advantage of it from the perspective of the public weighing in. And I would bet that you will hear a lot of the same things that we heard last night, which is, I support you, but go somewhere else.
I also think that the public, and no offense to the public, but they aren't experts in housing or the complexities of chronic homelessness and persistent mental health challenges and chronic health conditions. And, you know, I am impressed with our community that we have been trying to understand that. There's been, I mean, the Homeless Service Center has done the Homeless in Bellingham film series in an effort to try to get, you know, just regular people who are like, why are there so many people on the street? Why is Maritime Heritage Park so scary? Like, these trying to explain how people got into that situation. And I think it's a reflection of just how privileged mainstream Bellingham and Whatcom is. I mean, I think our norm as a society here is we don't know people that are that poor or struggling with mental health in that way or that disconnected from services. And, you know, in some ways, I think that having forums, even, you know, the port meeting, things like that, where it's encouraging civic engagement, it's encouraging people to use their voice, and hopefully a space where we can also educate about best practices and the evidence-based practices that are being done that are actually cost savings. I mean, the most humane thing we can do is, you know, give people the assistance that they really need. And it's actually the cheapest thing to do as a community. And not that I don't enjoy using that, but I think it is an angle to say it's actually cheaper for the residents. It's cheaper for our community to have these really challenging folks who live at Francis Place to be there instead of continuing year 15 living in a tent.
You know, I know I'm a port commissioner, but people ask me things about homeless issues, right? So I don't know a lot about it, but that's one thing I know. And when I tell people that the statistics are true around the world, it's cheaper to do this. It's cheaper to not, and because people say, we just have them, throw them in jail. But it's cheaper to not do that. It's cheaper to put them in a house somewhere and literally pay 100% of that than to keep touching them in jail or touching them and putting them in jail. And then somehow they're on the street and they got to go to the hospital and that's an ER visit. And we all know how much that costs. And so many people I tell this to, they just say, they shake their head and walk away because they don't believe that, you know, but the facts are there.
Yeah. The interesting thing to me, and it's such a complicated issue, but it's a really interwoven, interconnected issue. And Stephanie, you talked about the city's survey that they did. The three top issues were homelessness, economic security, mm-hmm. and affordable housing. And those things are all related. Mm-hmm. And you know, the terrifying thing in our society is I would say probably 60%, maybe even 70% of Bellingham is just a couple of paychecks away from being on the street. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they lost their job, if they you know, could not afford to make payments, they could suffer eviction, they could be out. So it's easy for us to kind of distance ourselves from people that are homeless, but you know, there, but for the grace of God, go we.
Well, I want to address specifically concerns about the town hall and public engagement. These events have to be set up to succeed. You know, I am so frustrated every time I go to a city council meeting or a county council or I watch it on BTV because the structure of it is come up to the mic, you have 3 minutes, and then it's over. And it's mm-hmm. like it never happened. Mm-hmm. There's no response. There's no anything. And when you've got 80 people, maybe that's how it has to be. But if you structure it for success where you have experts, you have people who can address comments and correct nonsense, you can make something valuable happen. And I hope that this will be something that's more in that direction.
Well, I mean, it's easy to bash, and I think you bring some excellent points. All of you bring some excellent points. Who comes to the town hall? It was sort of what you were hinting at, Tim. Who's at that town hall, and how privileged are they? Who took that survey, and did they have access to a computer? And we talked about that in a previous show about is it the people who are homeowners? Is it the people who have a different level of being invested? And those were most of the people, if not all the people, who were at the Port Commission meeting last night.
You know, the people that came to the Port meeting last night all have jobs. But I don't disagree with a thing that Tim just said, because I look at these numbers constantly because I'm paying very close attention to our local economy. And I know people that if they lose their jobs, they might have a little bit of help. Let's say they're injured. They'll get a little bit of help from LNI. But you know, the LNI payments and the unemployment insurance runs out, they're on the street, you know, because they've got expenses that are much greater than those can cover. So, and there are a lot of people. As a builder, I can tell you there are a lot of people in my industry, that's exactly where they are. They're not bad people. They just don't make a lot of money, and the safety net's just not there if they get injured on the job.
So here's the city who is desperately trying to address this problem, and my heart goes out to our mayor and to our city council and everyone who's involved, the agencies like Catholic Community Services and Opportunity Council, and I can see that effort of really wanting to include people, and I think that's what the town hall, Tim, you even said, like part of it is to say, look, we're having a town hall because we're trying. Mm-hmm. So what could or should the city be doing if that's not the right approach, or what would be an additional good approach?
Yeah, when I spoke to the council president, Michael Lilliquist, he was unsure himself. I mean, we set this up. There wasn't even a lot of agreement on the city council whether they should actually do this, because I think what Dave said earlier is on their minds too. It's like, let's not put together a meeting that just turns into a complaint session. Well, how are we going to gather data from this? What kinds of information do we want to convey to the public? What information do we want to receive back from the public? There's not a lot of consensus about it. So when I say that I think that the people that show up are going to set the tone, I think that that's probably what's going to happen at this point.
So we'll have to see, and this is a situation that obviously is one of the most critical in our community, and that I think is going to take a lot of minds. And I did want to ask you, Tim, because you wrote an excellent gristle about it today, and at the end of your excellent gristle at the Cascadia Weekly, you said that the city is now looking at their other options, and I kind of wondered what you might be hinting at there.
Well, the city owns a lot of property around Bellingham. This was a piece of property that the city owned. The port just happened to have an option on it. And so there is something called the Lignin Building that is further into the site.
That's port property.
But maybe something can happen there where you sell that piece of property to the city for $780,000. But
it's,
and then there's a sash and door site. There's a lot of reasons why the city does not want to use that property. But you know, I think the city is in a position now where its least painful options are foreclosed upon. So it's going to have to look at more and more painful kinds of decisions. I mean, I think the city is very committed to this. I don't think they're going to take no for an answer. I don't think they can take no for an answer. There's a lot of people in the business community that are extremely concerned about trying to get the homeless situation under control in the downtown core so that people feel safe and they feel like they can shop and enjoy their city. I just think that the city is going to have to drill down and come up with some options that, you know, that were not foremost in their choices.
Well, I'll tell you, I was on the Mayor's Neighborhood Advisory Committee for the Leonard Streets as a representative for a number of years, and I was involved with the Old Town Plan. And to see Maritime Heritage Park not utilized to its best potential, there's been over $8 million invested in that, and it's the only park downtown. There will be more parks downtown, but you can't have one park for some people and one park for another people, right? So this is an answer that the city must have, not just for that park, not just for Old Town, not just for downtown Bellingham, but for all of Whatcom County, because the problem is outside Bellingham as well.
And just to, this hasn't been brought up, but you know, Washington State is 47th in the country in mental health spending dollars. So the city and the county and most of the players are currently involved in the ground response and coordinated engagement, the GRACE, which is going to look a lot. It's, you know, crisis. It's kind of a dealing with familiar faces and how we respond to that as a community. And it really does have to do with mental health and co-occurring disorders and substance use, chronic health conditions. These are, you know, we talk about homelessness, but we really need to talk about the fact that our state, and I probably because of taxes, but you know, is not we are not doing well when it comes to how we treat
mental health. I
got to
jump in on this one because that's a frightening statistic. I hear constantly when I'm down in Olympia, which I'm there a lot, there's plenty of money for everything. I hear it every time I go there.
From who do you hear it?
Well, I think we can guess. Okay, so that's astonishing to me because when I hear people say there's plenty of money for everything, but we're 47th in spending for mental health care, that's beyond sad. That hurts. That hurts just to even think about.
And let's be clear that our funding for mental health programs has been cut incrementally over the years.
And it's not just programs, but staff. It has been tremendously difficult to recruit and retain mm-hmm. qualified staff. We are paying mental health nurses way below market rate. And it's just getting that pay scale up to a reasonable amount for what is a really difficult job has been seemingly impossible.
Mm-hmm. Well, you would know about that, wouldn't you, Melora?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard work, and it's hard to retain staff. It's hard to it's hands-on, and I mean, CCS has a great track record, and so does the Opportunity Council, Lydia Place, other agencies, but it's like I think those that are doing this work also really need to be surrounded by the community and supported by them, and so that we don't feel like we're just out there and it's on us that we somehow are supposed to fix this huge thing.
And do more with less. Always, always, always do more with less. Melora and I, both masters of social work, and have that, woo, and have that, but have that empathy and passion for the situation. But I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Melora, when you talked about taxes, and it's an uncomfortable conversation that our state doesn't want to have, but everything comes back to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have to applaud folks that work in that field because I constantly think when I hear people that say, oh, I had such a rough day at work, and they work in an office, and I think somebody who works, like that can be an emotionally draining thing at times, you have bad corp, whatever, but somebody who's working with folks that have, you know, mental health issues, that's got to be the most emotionally difficult job to have ever. So when people do that and then say, I had a rough day at work, I get it because that's probably the most stressful thing anybody could possibly do. And the successes are so challenging for them. So it's I applaud them. And the pay for them, not enough, not even close.
Yes, yeah. I agree.
It's probably hard to retain people at such low wages with such an emotionally challenging work.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you did an excellent segue talking about state, and Dave is ready to tell us where we are or where we aren't with our current state budget. And we are in special session, paying people how much a day? I can't even remember.
$120 a day. So we are over the $100,000 mark by a good margin for how much the special session has cost so far. And there really hasn't been a lot of movement on budget negotiations. There has been some closed door meetings on an education fix, budget still isn't working. We've gone in through the name calling phase, and we're into the and through stunts, and now we're into just misrepresentation, and it's sad. It would be nice to, you know, see a little fire, see a little drive. Both houses are still meeting. They're still conducting business, pushing bills through, but we're not, you know, not seeing a lot of action on the headline item.
But it's the same polarization. Luann Van Woveren, our 42nd representative, sent out an email update, supposed update, talking about how willing people were to resolve the McCleary situation, which is our mandated paying for education, K-12 education. It's mandated. It's in our state constitution. But according to her, it's the Democrats that are holding things up by wanting to raise taxes. It's the same argument that's going around and around and around.
Right. And, when people say taxes, people's brains stop working. And they start thinking crazy and stupid things. And so this has turned into a dance of, you know, oh, we're not really raising taxes. The Republican plan calls for a fairly large shift of taxing authority from school districts to the state. It's a tax increase. But they're really intent on making it look like it's not. And I think that's so empty and self-serving. It was I laughed out loud reading that announcement, it's sad. We're at a point now where we're just bleeding money, and if it's really that important to them to get this taken care of, do it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the way I read that statement is schools are suffering because they don't have enough money, and the Democrats are holding things up because they want money.
Right? So it's so frustrating. And when we were off, when we were at our break, Commissioner McCauley was talking about a cartoon that talked about futility, that an oatmeal cartoon, if you must know, that was talking about futility, and it didn't really have any solutions for the way people think. And I feel like our whole 45 minutes that we've been on the air, we've been talking about solutions that are futile, and now we're talking about it on a state level. And
yeah, and I want to tie this back to, you know, talking about the city and even the port. Part of being a public servant is, part of your service is leadership. And that's something that now we very clearly need at the city level. We need our city council to show some leadership and show some direction and tell us what they want so that we can have a conversation about that. And we need that at the state level as well. We need people to show some leadership, stop playing around, and, you know, get a pretty basic job done, and soon.
Absolutely. And I will point out that next week we will be talking about those candidates, because the filing deadlines are coming up. And if you haven't decided to run, this is a good time to run. May 15th is when filing week starts. We really need good people for some of those open positions. You'll hear more about that soon. Another way to take action, it's not the only way, but it's a visibly powerful way. We have not let up in Bellingham or across America in visible protests. And sometimes it doesn't feel like we're changing laws, but the fact that we are keeping visible and keeping up the pressure is a powerful thing. So I want to end our show by talking about the March for Dignity. It is coming up. It happens every year. It's the Farm Worker and Immigrant March in Whatcom County. It is this Sunday, May 7th. And they say that they invite all of the community to march in solidarity in support of our farm workers that are there for you, and every bite of food that you take help make our local community one of the most viable in the state. This is a very important march to show that we really appreciate the workers, the immigrants, people of color, the people who are integral to our society and are part of our community. If you'd like to know more, and definitely if you'd like to volunteer, contact Community to Community online or on Facebook. And our citizen journalist Liz Darrow was at the climate march that happened Saturday, April 29th. It was the Red Line, Salish Sea, No Dapple Coalition, Western Washington's Blue Group, Familias Unidas, Whatcom and Skagit Industrial Workers, and about 700 people rallying in support of climate justice, pretty much the same day that the EPA took down all of the climate justice stuff and all of the climate stuff from their website, and everything about green power and green energy. We are going to go out listening to some conversation from the Climate March.
National level to take part, to do a sister march to the one that's happening in DC, the March for the Climate, for Jobs and Justice.
Announcement that's coming down from up front. People of color, indigenous people, up front with the red, that we are the Red Line banner. People of color, indigenous people, up front. This perceived contention between labor and the environment
that unions don't care about the environment. My family is a working family. You know, we organize with Familias Unidas, Farm Worker Union, Doni Independent Farm Worker Union, and Washington State. Negotiating a contract, by the way. Workers do care about the environment. We're part of the working community. The workers are part of our community. We make sure that we talk about transforming the system, that we don't leave out workers at the same time. That's why we fight for a just transition, making sure that those green jobs are available to the workers once we start transitioning away from refineries, coal, digging, mining.